Can I? Okay, here we go. So my name is Ranganathan Srikant. Yeah, good. Oh, good. And I'm in the product team, Windows Server System Center. And one of the things that we'll talk about, three specific things today. I'd originally planned this to be two areas, but once the embargo on System Center R2 was lifted, I was able to add the specific investment that we are doing in R2 as well. So the three things that I want to share with you today is overview of CSPP, and CSPP stands for Cloud Service Process Pack. That's a feature of System Center that helps stand up private cloud. I'll go through that. I'll talk about how we can enable chargeback in enterprise scenarios. And the third thing that I just mentioned is we invested a lot in enabling tenant usage for the service provider scenarios, and I'll talk about that as well. So very quickly, what I wanted to share here is the fact that our release cadence is increasing. So in April last year, we announced the System Center 2012, very quickly following with Windows 20 Server 2012. And then earlier this year, we talked about SP1 availability of System Center along with Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. As you can see from this, our innovations are going to continue to increase in cadence. And right here, we are in TechEd in June. We're already talking about System Center R2, milestone preview later this month, and probably a release end of this year. I did not add this here because part of the disclosure rules, I didn't want to put that. But that's the theme that, overall theme that you'll see in the conference as well, is our release cadence is increasing. So which brings us back to the topic that I want to focus on, which is about service delivery. If you look at the overall picture of service delivery, and many of you have already been experienced, it's a question in terms of how agile can I be? How can I still stay compliant and make sure that I do have a governance model around it? And then I have a choice, and here the choice refers to, let's say, private cloud, public cloud, hybrid clouds. It could be many, many of these things, but it's very clear that IT is now being asked to provide all these three without compromises. And that's how we think about it, and I want to share that, is when we start thinking about our features, when you start thinking about where to invest, this is kind of the framework that we are thinking about. How can we make IT be agile, stay compliant, help their business units, as well as the workloads stay compliant, and how can they also offer choices? And this is not an either-or question, at least in our mind. It's all in passing. We need to make sure that we get all of this. Which means that from an operational point of view, you should be able to offer these things and operate and optimize in a continuous basis. So I'll bring down to the specifics now. Now that I know these things, so okay, what are some of the self-service offerings that we provide from our framework and our stack today? How is automation and compliance help you? Lastly, from an optimization standpoint, what does chargeback capacity management analytics helps you? And how we continue to incrementally move the needle in all these three directions. This session, when I talked about CSPP, when I talk about chargeback, when I talk about tenant subscriptions, some of these things will become clear to you and what the framework that we are using. This session, unfortunately, is a conflict between another session that is happening. I'll show in the resources section later on. I'd strongly encourage you to go and then watch the videos if not. We're investing a lot, and we heard Brad talk about consistency. We heard Brad talk about how we want to go towards a multi-cloud model. So these are all the principles in which we're offering and how we can move between clouds. So when I look at self-service and I look at service delivery particularly, I look at three things. If you look at Gartner, and I'll show later on, self-service is one of the pillars in which we actually make sure that things happen. That's pretty much table stakes right now. It needs. I don't think anybody's even questioning that. The question is, can we offer self-service within the governed standardized model? It's not self-service itself. When I open up the floodgates, can I still stand up the stack and can I still be in control of my infrastructure? As much as I can talk about capacity being infinite, the reality is capacity is not infinite. Capacity is finite, and the question is how do you apportion capacity? How do you make sure that they are standardized? How they are operated in a very optimized manner? So we talk about standardization. So one of the key things for self-service is if you do standardize, and we'll talk about a little bit about that later on through our stack, you get one step closer towards compliance. Today's model of compliance, at least if you look at different people that you're talking about, when you talk about compliance, it's largely after the fact. And a lot of time is being spent in terms of, can I bring it back into compliance once it's drifted off? And I want us to start thinking in terms of, can we actually be compliant by design? And that's how we think about it as continue to invest in this. Can we become compliant by design? And standardization is one such mean. And the other sessions today and throughout the week, we'll talk about how we are making it standardized between private cloud and public cloud, Azure. The same set of models, the same set of operational models, experience, the consumption models, the authoring models, how do they stay consistent between these clouds, at the same time, help you standardize. Lastly, automation. By now, as I said, self-service, automation is another table stakes. If you don't automate, you're not going to get the efficiencies, but we also have to automate the right things. So we talk about that as well. Brings it back to the stack that we offer. If you go from the left to right, there are two portals today that we offer in the System Center stack, the Service Manager portal and the App Controller portal. They're two different consumption models. The best way to distinguish them is to, when I go acquire capacity, then today, and if they have to be within a controlled environment or in terms of you use Service Manager to acquire capacity. But once having acquired the capacity, you can operate on the capacity using the App Controller model because it provides you the ability to go back and control your VMs, start and stop, migrate them, multi-cloud. But the capacity itself has a financial as well as the process elements to that, and that can be done through Service Manager. So Service Manager is largely at this point in time in this particular framework, in CSPP in particular, is an acquisition, a capacity acquisition system. And then once you acquire the capacity, and then you can, you should be going back to the agility model that I described earlier, give that responsibility back to the developers and how they want to consume that. But now because it's a sandbox system that, and you've bounded the capacity in which how they can use it. And I'll go through that in detail later on. As I go into the middle, I talked about automation, and we are using Orchestrator as the automation engine and an integration engine. Oftentimes, the self-service request that you put in front needs to be backed by an automation engine. And if it's not, then it's going to be very difficult for you to scale. So our the Orchestrator engine helps you do that. Not only does it do automation, its primary purpose is also about integration, because it's where each environment is going to have its own set of processes. Not only should I go back and provision a VM, I should go register this VM in a different place, I should notify a whole bunch of people. So there's a bunch of integration opportunities that come out, and we use Orchestrator as the integration layer. And as I go further down to the right, it is where now the infrastructure kicks in, and we talk about virtual machine manager. We actually have the fabric itself is landed. So here's a quick, how many of you are familiar with the System Center stack before I start throwing more and more of System Center? So pretty much 50%, okay, pretty much everybody. So this whole fabric here is backed on a Windows server but managed by System Center. And we already have these tools in the market. We are just trying to make sure that they all work together in delivering the data centers. So we'll continue to invest in Ops Manager, which continues to monitor, continue to invest in Virtual Machine Manager, which is now managing the stack, which also now bridges to Azure. Those are the kind of conversations that we'll have. So let me take a step back from the concrete elements. When I look at cloud, this was shared even in MMS last year, by Brad Anderson. This is a slide from that. So some of our principles have not changed on that. When I look at this particular slide, a cloud to me represents four things. One is a collection of pooled resources. If you're not doing pooled resources, then you're not doing cloud. And for virtual machine manager, it's a fabric that helps manage that pooled resources on top of Windows Server. That's number one. Of course, it has to be elastic, we know that. And self-service, we just talked about it. So these four things that I hear on the screen are table stakes for you to call yourself a cloud. It has to be elastic, and elasticity is obtained through a combination of orchestrator as well as the other components in the picture. We have a pool set of resources. Once you acquire a resource, mm-hmm. and if you return the resource back to the pool after it's used, then it's goodness, and we'll talk about that. Self-service, and lastly, which is usage-based. If you're not metering, and if you're not able to go back, pay for use, and pay only for what you consume, is the foundation of cloud business model. So if you're not going to play in that, it's going to be very hard for you to now continue. In enterprises and in hosters, the distinction between the granularity in which you consume the resources might change, rightly so. Enterprises may not care about the fact that you're consuming it a minute-by-minute basis, but hosters care, right? But then, nevertheless, you still have to go back and look at what is the consumption of your resource to do two things. Not only should you should have transparency so that you can at least optimize your own fabric, and then that's first-order business. And if you choose to, you can then surface it back to your tenants if there is a model for that, and we'll talk about that. So, which brings us back to the conversation of this session. Cloud Services Process Pack is a feature on top of System Center. And that feature of System Center allows you to deliver a private cloud using self-service through automation, through ability of some amount of governance, we'll talk about that, and also provides you the metering capability so that you can enable chargeback. So it has the four elements that I mentioned earlier in a feature, but this feature is built on top of the System Center stack, particularly Service Manager for the self-service and the orchestration integration part of it and the chargeback elements. And Orchestrator, of course, is the automation engine, and then they actually talk to Virtual Machine Manager at the back end to actually give you the pool resources, right? So, for a moment, let's go back and look at your own data center as well. So you have a bunch of tenants. The tenants concept here is that your business units could be tenants. If you're a hoster, the customers who onboard into your system could be your tenants, but we have modeled it the same way. Your business units, and if you're going to go back and then they're going to make requests on you and you're standing up a fabric on behalf of them and they're consuming your resources, they're modeled as tenants and they have cost centers associated with it. If it's somebody else outside your org, and if you're standing up a fabric, shared infrastructure for enterprises, and you're a hoster, then the tenants here could be somebody else. It's an account that you create. The consumption pattern is going to be very familiar. Once you onboard your tenants, then you can subscribe to them. And this is an example where the tenant administrator is now going to go ask for some specific set of quota, let's say 100, 200 gigabytes worth and 1 terabyte worth of disk space, storage space, and then carve them into one subscription, and then delegate it to their team members so that they can now consume that. So now you're bounding your problem, saying that I'm going to go, and not only will you be in a position to tell you that these are all the compute elements, you can tell me which templates to use, which logical networks to use, so that now what you're creating is a virtual data center. You have your superset of logical networks available. You have your superset of, let's say, compute and storage. Now you took a chunk of that and say, play within this chunk, right? And then you delegate it out, and you delegate it to the project lead. And the project lead can then, and their team can now consume the subscription. It could be a dev test subscription, a test subscription, a production, a demo, and we'll go through that. So the model here is going to be twofold. We talked about agility early on. You could choose, and it's purely up to the deployment, that here is a production VM or a production subscription, and any changes to this are completely locked down. If you want to change something, needs approval. If you want to operate something, needs approval. No direct access to just cut, right? Or you can completely go the agile model to say, here's a dev subscription, I'll carve it out, don't tell me anything about it, and then you move on. And that's how you balance both governance at the same time agility. For dev and test, give them the agility that they want, but you pre-provision your environment, if I can say that, and then give access control to that. And the other environment can be a little bit more tightened. So imagine that you're Contoso.com, you're a Fabric admin, you're onboarding tenants. As I mentioned earlier, tenants here refer to business unit one, business unit two, or some artifact that you can actually associate a cost center, right? Because at the end of the day, you might want to show them, even if there's no actual money exchanged within an enterprise, you might have at least to show where your computer is being spent and what the yearly budgets are going to look like. So you might want to have, and there are things that you can do to even influence behavior, and I'll get that later on. Once these tenants are onboarded, once they have carved out their subscriptions, then they can start creating VMs on those, right? And when you create VMs, we'll talk about a few aspects of it. We can still retain some control in my demo. Which brings me to this kind of, so if you're familiar with the service manager portal, this is an example of that. As I mentioned, this CSPP is built on top of service manager. So the look and feel is a service manager portal. But on the right-hand side is where I ask you to focus, which is a set of a life cycle of the things that you would follow in a self-service model for you to stand up a cloud, or at least the kind of service that you want to offer your self-service users. Let's start at the top. You have to register yourself as a tenant. You self-register, you identify yourself into the system. So you now have an account created, right? Once you do that, great. Now you are in the system, the capacity itself is available. Now you need to say, how much of this capacity do I need today in this subscription? It could be a dev subscription. And here, subscription or cloud resources, subscribe to cloud resources is not restricted to just compute and memory. Here you specify all aspects of your cloud artifacts, which templates to use, because this is an example of how you want to standardize. So you want your dev and test developers to take the latest, build that is available. But when you come to production subscription, you want to really give them the gold master template. You control them here. You say, hey, here's the subscription. It's called a production subscription. This will only have Windows 2008 R2, right? Because that's the only one that you have approved for your system. Yes, 2012 will be awesome, but 2012 is still restricted to only dev and test. So when a dev and test subscription are created, they'll start seeing templates for 2012, but the production deployments, maybe your IT has standardized on 2008 R2, they'll be only be able to choose that. That's an example of a standardization. So you get compliance, a little bit of compliance by staying upfront in terms of your standardization. As I continue to go through this, I subscribe. Now I can go and deliver, or at least create a VM against that subscription. And when I go create a VM at this point in time, it'll restrict me to the choices that you have provided. I can only use Carpnet 1 and Carpnet 2. I cannot use the other logical network, or I cannot use the storage pool. I cannot use the service template. So all these things are pretty much multidimensionally controlled, and we call that as a cloud resource. Once you have that, you can actually go back and provision a VM. Lastly, as I mentioned, we provide out of the box two kinds of templates. One template requires you to have an approval, and one template doesn't require. So you can, it's pretty much a convenience function. You can flip a bit and then say, hey, no approval on this, and you're fine, but we're just making it easy. But as I go through this, you can also do the life cycle. You can actually go back and update the VM, right? In a different model, in a cloud dev and test resource model, you don't even want to touch it. You just want to give it to them. But in a production controlled environment, you want to be able to go have a certain amount of control. So you can actually have a request to say up my memory or change certain things. Lastly, as like any other CRUD or a life cycle, you can remove yourself off of the system, and then the tenants will be gone. So in this scenario, you're just following the life cycle. The key thing that you'll note is when you're requesting a VM, and I'll refer to this later on, you have an option to say when is the lease expire on this VM. This is going to be important, because this is an opportunity for IT admins and others, or Fabric admins, to give some kind of a resource pool. If the VMs don't come back to your pool, then they're going to be VM sprawl, and you don't know which VM to go back, and then when the resources are all gone. So there's an option here to say, hey, remove this VM at a certain date, and then you can start triggering off emails, giving them warnings and things like that based on what you want to do. It's purely up to the, one of the biggest things that I found is people are very hesitant to go back and shut down VMs, right? It's, honestly, I would not be happy, but if everybody in this room acted like I do, I can show you my remote desktop manager. From last year, MMS and the MMS before, and I have about 80 VMs or 90 VMs that were once useful for some point in time, and then they're still there. Nobody has bothered to come back and ask me for it, because every time the build changes, the thing I move on, ask for a new set of topology, and then I get it. But the admins who are managing that stack, they don't even, they can't shut it off. They don't know whether I'm still being used or not. And this is another way to go back and say, we have put the data in the system, you can start implementing your own policies around that. I'll come to that in a good question. So the question on the table is, this is centered on virtual machines and what do we do for other services? And short answer to this scenario, CSPP, is only focused on virtual machines. But as you see the next generation of investment that we are doing, we have extended the same concept to other class of services. And that's why I strongly encourage you to watch the other sessions throughout this week. There are many. This week, so we talk about how we deliver a web pass, a pass on-prem, which is very consistent with Azure, how to do SQL as a service, that's already available, it's all infrastructure components, and we are now extending this framework, and then there's also a call to action. As we speak, my manager is doing a call to action to a similar community to say, build your own services on top of this framework, right? So, no, we are announcing all those things this week. Yes, the stack would look different. It is not a service manager stack. It is a Windows Azure pack. I think we just named it today. I'm still not there yet. But that is a pack. It'll have a look and feel of Windows Azure, and it has the artifacts to do that, and that's where we want new services to crop up. Good question. So at this point, what you're hearing today is the snapshot in time. These set of services will migrate into that as well. So today we have, even in that stack, the ability to actually provision a VM, but doesn't have the same governance model. You cannot ask for approvals. You cannot come back and put controls around this. So we are still going to continue to invest to make sure that the enterprise aspects of it, which is focused on governance, continues to use the stack, but we will. What we do plan is to go back and invest in the governance model. Continue to go back in, so that eventually some of these services will start lighting up into that stack. Yes, this is service manager and orchestrator. This is service manager, orchestrator, pre-built content with lifecycle around that. Yes, but it is only focused on VMM. So yes, you are absolutely right. What is this? This is pre-built content. This is making it easy for somebody to go back and then say, okay, I already have service manager, I already have orchestrator. If I install this management pack and install these DLLs as service templates, I can now start offering the service. Correct. There you go. So we do have customers and using this today, different enterprises. It's enterprise focus. They're largely using it for dev and test with some amount of approval. So and these are pretty large VMs, the number of VMs. And some of these things are, depending upon how early they got into the beta programs and others, some of them have been using it for more than a year now. Sorry. So this is again administration screens, and I'll go through that in a second on the same thing. But let me just go and show you a demo of what I'm talking about. Pardon me when I type my passwords. Okay, so the screenshot that I showed you pretty much lists the same thing. So in this particular case, I have tenants onboarded and a subscription already created. So let me show that in a second. So for people who haven't seen it, this is Service Manager console. Service Manager contains all the resources that you're trying to deploy. It contains the what's called the CMDB. The CMDB is the, all the instance space and the relationships, all of them stored, which allows you to actually build processes and apps on top of that. We're just leveraging the framework. In this particular case, if I can, I don't know whether I have Zoomit installed or not, I have tenants already installed. No, I don't have. So tenant one and tenant two are already installed on this, and this is where I talked about how they can in this tenant, I've already given the cost center all the attributes. So this is the first step in the process. You come onboarded into the tenant. But once you have a tenant onboarded, then as an individual user, you can now start creating a virtual cloud or a quota for you, right? Also through self-service request. You came in, you said, these are all the things that I need. I need 1 terabyte of disk storage space. I need these templates. So you created your quota, your space. And they're all captured here. And this was done through self-service request. And you know who requested it and how much they requested. All those things are kept here for both auditing purposes as well as for actual usage. So when I actually go and consume this the subscription, this is what I'm going to use. So let me quickly get out of this and show you this one. So I'm now going to the self-service portal, and if I go request for a virtual machine, you should probably be seeing a couple of familiar things. It should probably, it should offer me the subscription that's already available for me. Now I can, if this is a multi-layer list, I can say many things here. I can go back, let's assume that I have access to a dev and a test and a production subscription. Now I can choose which one I'm actually going to request. So this is another set of form, as somebody mentioned here. This is just a customization of SM's capability. So we're asking a bunch of questions that require to create a VM. We're asking, well, how many do you want and what's the geometry of such a VM? Ask me again, please. Yes and no. So the question is portal getting any attention? So one of the things that once I started looking, started taking responsibility for Service Manager as a whole, I found that we made a couple of design choices which are not necessarily true going forward. One of them is an investment in the Silverlight web portal itself. It has become very brittle for us to actually invest. Our newer investments, and number one, being in Silverlight prevents us to be a multimodal experience as well. So we are taking these investments not in the in the current product line, but rather into the HTML5 based, yes, that's where our investments are. Ask me, yes. And some of that you'll actually see in the rest of the sessions throughout the week. You'll see the VM provisioning at least come in there. And we are trying to get the next set of investments will going to be how do I get the approval cycles or the service request aspects of it into that portal as well. So that's the next one, but it will not be in this technology framework, but it will be in the HTML5. Yes. So this is an example. So in the previous, when I created a subscription, I restricted my choices to just these two. So I'm, when I do create a VM, I'm only restricted to these. Imagine a scenario where there are, this is your list of standardization, right? And this is true for templates, it's true for networks, all kinds of objects. And this is, lastly, this is where I want to focus on, is when I do provision this, I have an option to go back and then, so automatically the system, the gentleman asked me, is this on top of the System Center Orchestrator? The answer is yes, but these are the small things that we will listen to our customers, and the VM sprawl. Once you provision a VM, there is a default date by which the system will automatically, there's a background job, an orchestrator job, that will actually shut down the VM, move to the VMM library. It's not lost, but at the same time, it's just, and then you could, in theory, run another orchestrator job that will warn people a couple of days ahead of saying that this is happening, and if they choose to extend, they can come and extend it. If not, it'll get. So this is an example of how things will actually go back to the pool. VMware, yes. So people are actually using this framework. We are actually working with a company right now, not as an extension model, but using the existing framework, but customizing it for them, where they are deploying it on non-hypervisor stacks as well. Yes. But it has to be managed by VMM. That is one thing that we are asking for, because for the chargeback scenarios to come in, we need to be able to... VMM. So otherwise the chargeback features are not lighting up. So in this case, all I did was to go back and request a virtual machine using the geometry that I specified within the subscription that I laid out, right? So this job will actually fire off Orchestrator and eventually land in VMM. And once the VMM, this request will continue to stay pending, and once the job is completed, it'll flip into the right state. Yes.
I notice here we just selected the size. Is that recommended that you just have separate pools depending on that?
So the SLA aspect of it, let's talk about the SLA. So it's the disks pool is one. There could be other gold clouds. You could have partitioned it based on cloud. So you could actually go back and say pull it on this cloud, where cloud becomes your abstraction for the class of SLA that you want to provide on that. And you can say this is the cloud. So when you create your subscription, you can create the subscription on the cloud that you want to, and then make sure that, yeah, so that it's tied to a cloud and a class and SLA that backs that.
Okay.
Yes, that's possible. And you can also ACL this while I'm doing this demo with AST test. Not all subscriptions are going to be available for everybody. It's segmented, it's ACL'd and controlled, saying that if your project lead gives you access, that's the only one that you have. So when you walk into this portal, you're not going to see the other machines and other subscriptions. It's only for yourself. And those kind of controls happen when I subscribe to the cloud, and that subscription where I say, hey, these are the templates, these are the clouds, these are the resources that I want in the cloud. And that happens in that step. So anyway, this process will continue. And eventually, as you can see here, it will transition off from, it's auto approval. I've set it in a way that it's auto approved. So this, while the process goes through an approval check process, it has been defaulted to auto approve. It'll flip into auto approve. And once it is approved, the runbook activity will actually happen. And the runbook here is Orchestrator will actually take the request and push it into VMM and create a VM. So I'll come back to this because it's going to take a while for the process to happen. There are some challenges with Service Manager Orchestrator in general. The default workflow transitions, even within Service Manager, because we have optimized for scale requests, so the one-off request will still take some time, the time in which the transitions occur. And second thing is once the orchestrator fires off, the VMM deployment, depending upon VMM itself, the gigabytes or bytes that I have to transfer will decide whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes. So, but I will come back. And what I want to show here is at least if the request reaches VMM, that's a good sign for us to know that not only did the request initiated from Service Manager went through to Orchestrator and ended up in VMM. And the VMM, when I see R, I can actually show this. So meanwhile, let me just transition off to Orchestrator and show you that the request is indeed going there. So this is the Orchestrator console, and as you can see, there are four runbooks. The runbook that just happened is create VMs. That is the one runbook that's going to be executed as a result of this request. And I can go. So in the administration pane, as part of the setup, one of the nice things about Orchestrator and SSM relationships is that you can establish connectivity between different system center components. And we have already established connections between Orchestrator and SSM. By doing that, one nice advantage is the runbooks come down because they're automatically brought down. As new runbooks are created in Orchestrator, they're automatically brought down here, and then it allows you to build apps or scenarios or workflows around that. In this particular instance, you already have these things. This is what Orchestrator is going to fire, and you can also have a deep link into that. So this is the runbook that we're going to see now, and if I go look at the orchestration console, so these are all the, if I go look at the instances, this is the one that you can actually see, and another one will start popping out here pretty soon once the runbook, not here. So this one, we can actually refresh, so we can start, a new instance will be created here, and this new instance will start provisioning the VMs. Okay, so I don't know whether this is the, they're still in progress. Oh, I have to approve it. I forgot. It's not manual approval. I need to go approve this. Still manual. Give me a second. Sorry about that. So what I'm opening right now is the service request that was created. And if I look at all the activities that it requested, this is one of those. It's a review activity that is waiting. And I open it up. And then I say, OK. I apologize for that. So this will actually set the process going. So I'm going to shift to another one, and I'll come back while the request is happening. On the same machine, I want to show a couple of different things. I'll switch to chargeback and come back to the runtime and show you the request actually reaching VMM. So here's what I want to do very quick, how we are approaching chargeback. This is a little bit of, when I started looking at chargeback about a year and a half to 2 years ago, I found that chargeback is heavily overloaded, and it brought back a lot of baggage in terms of, it was very, territorial, and return on investment was very questionable. So then I started thinking about it, how can I still make it relevant? Because I believe that there is a certain amount of transparency that's required as you move towards the cloud, even though the it is not perceived as today. So here is how, and it finally hit me when I started thinking more about it, is when you look at traditional IT, it was physical infrastructure, SLAs in weeks and months, and we said, fine, it was capacity managed by the consumer. What I mean by that was, there's an example that I use myself. In the absence of self-service, I have a bunch of three or four servers in my room. Some of them 3 years old, sometimes some even more, right? But they're there. Whether they ran at 2% idle or 20% idle or 100%, nobody really cares. Every once in a while, IT comes back and patches those machines. And then if you actually look at the performance on that, there'll be a spike for patching and then it's gone. Because I've also moved on to virtual machines. I hardly ever use these servers in the box, but they're acquired and they're used. Here, the mental model was, I own the capacity. And I'm the only person to answer this. And if I don't use it, my boss has already approved it, fine. It's already factored in. So what happened was, we ended up oversubscribing because we don't know how, it was very difficult to ask for new, so I ended up buffering it up. And most often, underutilizing it. But there is nobody to actually go back and question this because it's very hard to even question these things. But we do know that there was a lot of history. So in this model, then that's when the light bulb hit me. In this model, the only model that the operating model that IT can do is cost recovery. And at the point of purchase, I can actually go back and put an amortization schedule and I'm done. Total. Very relevant for the scenario. Except in cloud optimized IT, that model does not hold, that behavior does not hold, but sometimes get amplified as well. Here, we are using pool resources. And SLAs are coming in, no longer is it days and it's months, it's days and hours. And now the capacity itself is managed by the provider. And this is the key difference to me. Finally, it hit me that, hey, capacity is managed. Whether I'm asking for a resource inside an enterprise, whether I'm using it or not, is no longer just my concern because I'm actually preventing somebody from actually using it. And as a customer, I don't realize that. I oversubscribe and underutilize, but this time in spades because there's a system that is giving me opportunity to do that in volume. Self-service allows me to do these things much faster, so I amplify my erroneous behavior. And in this scenario, this is when it hit me that the capacity burden has shifted to the provider in this case. In a cloud scenario, the managing the capacity inside an enterprise has now moved to the provider. And if each one of us acted the way that I do today, your ability to stand up a cloud and be fair to all your clients will be compromised because many people are just wasting those resources. And that's when I thought, okay, let's go back and put these things in perspective. CSPP, you saw that when I ask for a cloud, I specify some quota. When I provision a VM, I specify some lease. A newbie is asking for an 8-gig VM, the boss has to intervene and say, hey guys, tone down a little bit. You don't need 8 gig, right? So we need to have those, so the part of our responsibility is to provide IT the ability to go back and put these kind of soft controls, self-policing at work. And then in that mode, I use chargeback. So chargeback is not a tool on its own, but it's an instrument that you can use it to come back and say, hey, this is what you're using today. There's no money changing hand, but you're by not using these resources, you're not being playing a good Samaritan within our enterprise. Right? That's an example. So that's how I approach this. And therefore, rather than blindly follow the public cloud model, which is show granularity at the minute level, I said, hey, we don't need that kind of overhead for this. They're changing behavior. Let's give them at a slightly higher level granular. They shouldn't be investing so much in the data warehouse to compute on a per minute basis to go back and say, they just want some tools. And those tools, so I decided that, okay, charging for compute units, provisioned compute units is good enough for this stage in the game. And we can price, we can still give you the pricing. So the gentleman there asked me, sure, can I do QoS? So I said, yes, we can price different clouds and you can actually give different prices for different tenants on the same cloud, right? And then keep the granularity to a day. Per minute is too aggressive. 15 minutes is too aggressive for enterprise. Public cloud, yes, there's going to be a lot more pressure to give you pay for usage. And we'll talk about that. We're investing in that too, but this is not a heavy burden situation. And the pricing model allows you to some amount of fixed and variable costs and gives you a self-service report. Again, the theme is going to be self-service. We already have the stack. You don't have to worry too much. You just go look at those things and dashboards. So let me quickly show you what I mean by those reports and capabilities. So the chart that you see here is in, we continuously track all this information and aggregate so that you can start seeing some high-level trends, right? And then you can come, in this particular case, there are many clouds offering. One is for testing, one is for production. You can come back and then you can look at this. I can also show you the scenario where you priced different cloud capacity across the different things. So you get a high-level macro trend. You know some of the cost elements are coming in. You know different tenants are consuming this at a different level. So I will show you this one. So the same data is shown here as well. In this case, you know the top three cost centers. So when you provision CSPP using a cost center one, cost center two, and then you priced a certain, the price sheet will look like this. Let me just show that to you as well. So you have the ability to go back and price them, and when you price them, your system automatically calculates the total cost, and then it gives you that. Give me a second. And it's going to give you a high-level overview in terms of where the spend is. And I'll go back to this and come back. And you can segment them by different cost centers or top three clouds. You can also get a detailed view of this. The same information is now a lot more detailed. You can just walk in and you can pick a certain tenant or a certain day or a certain month. In this case, I'll also go to the month view, both a daily view and a month view. And you can also, we store this data for 3 years. So if you ever want to go back, you can just slice them from a different pivot. And you do this without too much effort. The system is automatically doing this for you. No, this is part of SP1, which is now taking the data from process pack. So when you install a System Center 2012 SP1, it's an out-of-box feature.
Where?
SP1, yes. It's called chargeback.
Where does that spreadsheet get stored?
If you install chargeback, which is another feature that is in the documentation,
yeah,
you will see in the install folder there's a chargeback. I can show you too. So this is where you'd find. If you go into the Service Manager, it's part of Service Manager. So you have to have System Center 2012 SP1. And then there's a feature here, and that is a report that I'm showing.
You
need to do a couple of things. It is not automatically installed. The documentation will tell you that. We've also bundled the prereq MPs and everything else that needed. So you just go through and install. And then once you do that, all the schema and everything else takes care of it.
I noticed that the dollar figures that you associated with those charges,
yes,
are those something that you have to add in the spreadsheet, or can you put those in System Center?
No, there is. It's actually in the System Center screen. I was searching for it here. I wasn't patient enough. I'll show you. So for the gentleman out there, if you install a service chargeback in the administration panel, you will see a chargeback, a folder. And when I created this feature, I had ideas in one of the roadmap elements was it's not just infrastructure chargeback, but you should also be able to charge for service requests, because service requests and incident management and things like that, and orchestrator runbook. So it's a little bit, the framework is familiar, is extensible enough to support all these things, but we had to release. From a scoping perspective, we are only delivering infrastructure. And infrastructure here means VM. So we can price by different clouds. That's your, and I'll show that in a second. So these are all the different clouds that are available. You can create price sheets. What you're talking about is here. I'll show this to you. So here I can go and create price sheets. And when I create price sheets, I can specify my own fields, my own attributes. And then when they are applied to the target environment that you assigned it to. Because you're going to come back and say, assign it to these clouds. Right? When you assign it to these crowds, what happened to clouds history? So I should be able to go, I have to not publish it. The clouds that you already have in the system, that's what this is applied against. I'm going to say this is a price sheet for this cloud or this, both these clouds, it doesn't matter. And suddenly all the VMs in that cloud automatically become a subject to this price sheet. And you can change it later on. When you do change it, the changes will follow. So it's a very quick way to go back and say, I modeled my, this is approximately how my 1 gigabyte of memory is going to cost on this cloud, one CPU and one terabyte of storage. Just enter those costs and then say, by default, everybody gets it. Then you say, well, you know what, this business unit is going to be slightly different because they funded this effort. I'm going to give them a 10% discount or things like that. You can start creating exceptions on top of that, right? So we allow a model in which you can say every VM in this cloud is going to be subject to this geometry and this price, excepting for these things. And I picked that excepting because I thought that was more of a corner case rather than the default case where you want to simplify and you still want an escape valve. So that's the reason. So what it allows us to do is to create these, since Service Manager already has the ability to create data warehouse objects and cubes and dimensions, OLAP cubes, we took advantage of that feature and then took this pricing model with the VM instance data and started creating reports out of these. So we compute all the high level elements, the geometry, how long is a VM, how big is the VM and how much memory has been allocated for it, and then start applying pricing, whatever price that you applied on that, start creating reports, and then allowed you to go back and segment this because the warehouse capability just lights up, so we build these things. So you should be able to say what was my thing in January or in August to get a trend. So this is only showing you for the selected filters. And the same information is also available because it's an investment on Microsoft BI stack. The same information is also available through Performance Point if you have that. So this is more of the self-service view for people who really don't want to do Excel and then just be fine. But it's also available. So this is, again, this is not available out of the box for the gentleman out there. This is something that I created for the demo about 3-4 months ago. Yes, so all these things are possible because to me, the IP is not in these. This is existing tool set, whatever you're comfortable with. Some people use Excel, some people use Performance Point. Some people take Performance Point, download Excel from that because they like the drill through. Our investments is in the cubes and the data and its retention around 3 years. So you get all these things all these things come free. So that, I want to shift gears for a second. I just showed you these things. And it's a simple dashboard. I just showed you that as well. So that brings me to, so somebody asked me, can I extend, one of the often things that I get asked is, you're doing it only for VMs. but I have other things to do. Can I do this? The framework is extensible. We published a guide that allows you to go and say, these are all the three things. This is how you price your new object, create it. So there's an extensible model around that and published data model around that as well. So the data model is published, the step-by-step guide is published. Then there is a slightly different version of that extension. People are saying, okay, it's not that I want to build a new class of chargeback scenarios. What I want to do is you're not helping me. I want to do a particular property, let's say disk IO. You're not measuring disk IO. I want to be able to charge for disk IO. So we said, okay, out of the box, not available. But if you want to do an existing property, that, I mean, already existing in VMM and collected by OM, you just want to now surface it as a chargeback element, you can still do that. So we have provided step-by-step guide to say, okay, existing features, how to slightly modify and extend it for your own purposes. Because what we have done is most common scenarios, but your specific scenarios, if you want a particular property that's missing, you have to do some extensions around that. That brings me to the last topic, which is the first two were focused on. Yes, please. Shut down. Okay, awesome. Great question. So just to, for the purpose of the audio recordings, video recordings, the question is, during the day, based on my usage pattern, I have a much more number of servers powering my VMs, and then as time passes, as night rolls on, I consolidated them into a single server. The same amount of VMs?
Well, same amount of VMs. We make, for instance, for our business warehouse. Right? So during the day, our landing zone is fairly, not very busy. But at night, I have a lot of integrations.
I see. Okay, so fair enough. So the load in a given day changes, and can I use chargeback to do this? Unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, the scenario for this out-of-the-box feature is the granularity is a given day, and day here means 24 hours in a day is computed as if, and it's whether you shut down the VM or start up the VM, it doesn't matter. It's a provisioning basis. If you have provisioned a VM, it's going to account it for it, because largely the intention there was to say, let's go back and be transparent and change influence behavior. Your particular characteristic will be useful if you take a bet on the next feature that I'm going to talk about that advances the same feature, and you'll probably be able to use it because it gives you hourly basis. In fact, 15-minute basis. Okay? Yes? There's another question? So the question is, DCS has come, and DCS 1.0 or DCS 2.0, is this what, is this DCS 2.0?
I think so.
Okay, and then upgrade path to this. DCS and this, okay, so here's an interesting thing. Microsoft puts out many private cloud offerings, each suited for different price points, depending upon their needs. DCS, interestingly, builds on top of this, right? But they are in this particular case, I think they are one version behind. So they have expressed interest to, say, upgrade. So it's not that we will be upgrading to their model, but they'll be taking the next version of System Center's tech. And I would strongly recommend you to go talk to them in the booth, because that was a conversation when SP1 was released, that they have a schedule published that they will consume SP1. So you will be able to get that, but I don't know their timelines. So quickly, one thing that I wanted to really show So one of the things that once the embargo was lifted, I was able to share with you the investment that we are making now. What we did was the granularity was for a day that I showed you. Now we are actually increasing the granularity to an hour. So what we do is a couple of things. As I mentioned earlier, we wanted to go towards and help our customers be able to support pay as you go and pay for only what you use, right? And second, as I told earlier, the consumption model is so elastic for a provider. In this case, this is a service provider targeted feature. They require analytics at both the macro level and at the micro level, and I'll show you that. So today, Brad Anderson talked about System Center R2, Azure, Windows Server, all of them coming together for the R2 release. So what this stack does is brings Azure to on-prem. And not just VMs as a service, it brings other tenant consumption models such as Web Pass, Website Pass, SQL, Service Bus. A whole bunch of Azure concepts are now coming to the enterprise. Only difference between that is Azure stack is hidden largely beyond the consumption point. We don't know what's the real one that's powering it. Here, if you're going to stand this one up, you can stand it based on Windows Server and System Center. So I strongly encourage you to go listen to the other tracks where we go into details, and I'll be in one of these sessions as well, where we are able to take VM clouds, all the SQL websites, and other tenants' consumption services that can be self-serviced. And it's very quickly, you can now find out that for a system like this is going to generate lots and lots of data. As tenants are consuming this data, and you are providing from a stack, there's a lot of data that gets generated. So what we did was to provide a consistent REST endpoint to begin with, where all the usage data, think of this as a Twitter feed, just the firewall is open to you. So such an interface is now available, very consistent across all services, a very granular fashion, there is an interface that's available. On top of that, we said we siphoned off the same data and we started providing analytics on it. Third, people who stand up our stack based on our service provider license agreement model always struggle to find out how to be compliant within that framework because it's a function of how many processors and how many hosts that you have. So we started creating reports out of that, and I'll show those things to you very quickly. So as I mentioned, I strongly recommend you to go listen to some of the tracks or watch videos. There's a concept of a resource provider, and the resource provider is an interface into which different class of resources will get subscribed to or basically attached to. They're also out of the box. We are providing VM clouds, Service Bus, MySQL, websites, SQL, and then we're also opening this up for a third party to come back and say, please add your respective services, because the interface is possible. Second, it's your particular business case or a value add. The nice thing about this is because we're able to now standardize this, we have a very consistent REST endpoint across all these services. As new and new services get added, the contract mandates you to now send usage information at a granular fashion, which then gets accumulated for you and exposed to you as a REST endpoint. And one of the things that we did was we took the same REST endpoint, we collected data, not only from the tenant consumption model, but we also collect data from the fabric and started correlating that to you. So we provide that, and out of the box, when you get R2, you get usage analytics correlated between tenant consumption and fabric and start seeing patterns around that. Of course, the REST API is largely meant for billing and hosting provider, billing adapters who consume this API and start integrating with their billing system. That's one area that we are not going to invest on, which is creating a billing system itself. We're going to provide all the operational data so that you can now take the data and start creating your own adapter. So we are going to give you a reference adapter. We have partners working on it and an API that we'll stand behind. But we are encouraging our partners to actually create this and integrate with their existing billing system. And as I alluded earlier, this is a bet on Microsoft BI stack. So as long as you have Excel and PowerPoint, you can start consuming the analytics, because the investment that we are making is to make sure that they show up as OLAP models automatically, so that the consumption points could be standard tools that you use. Lastly, this is an example of what such an usage contract would look like. As you can see, there is nothing specific to the type of resource that's being consumed at all, because all the resources are nothing but a collection or a property bag which now goes with this envelope. So as long as you can subscribe to this kind of an endpoint, then you can start getting the events. And we actually provide reference adapters and reference documents for these. So with that, let me quickly show you this demo. Contrasting this with the enterprise chargeback, this one is going to show you, and I'll show this one very quickly. What I'm showing here is a very granular information about every 15-minute granularity. We track how many VMs do you have. Okay, for a moment, imagine yourself as a provider whose top line is depending on the number of VM hours, which is a very conventional pattern today. In fact, we heard Scott Guthrie announce that VMs granularity is going to be a minute for an Azure, because that's what you use and that's what you pay. Imagine that you're a provider that you don't want to track it at that granularity. This information is aggregated constantly and pivoted against different time dimensions. And out of the box, at least in this R2 release for System Center, and we are promising a 15-minute granularity, not a minute, but it's a lot better than 1 hour or a day that we used to in chargeback. In this scenario here, I'll just go refresh it. So this is, if you can see, this is around 253. If there's any more new data that has come in, because VMs are constantly running, it might probably bump it up. I don't know when it was last referenced. So it bumped up to 269. I have a bunch of VMs that are constantly running, and then when they run, they're constantly getting aggregated. You just saw that between when I refreshed it about maybe half an hour ago before the demo, and this one, we see the jump up. But I can actually do this. So I see this quarter by quarter. I want to see who are all the main subscriptions that are contributing to this. It's one click away. So now I have a few of these subscriptions, and I know the majority of the subscriptions is coming from two or three subscriptions. And it's easy for me to now say, okay, now show me what is the per hour breakdown on this, as an example, right? So you can we start collecting this data. We aggregate it as about five or six dimensions, time dimensions, a quarter, month, day, and hour. And the fidelity of the data is actually 15 minutes. Even though it's aggregated and reported at an hourly metric, the fidelity of the data is in about 15 minutes. This is an example. We collect a lot of metrics. This is another one that I thought I'd throw it in the dashboard, which is the disk IOPS. So as your data center is going through its IOPS, we collect them, we show them we segment them by hours, and then you can do the similar drill down as well. I'll show the same data in Excel. Previously, as you can see, the total was 253.75, which is the total number of hours. If I do refresh today, it should at least go back to the 269 number that we saw in the PowerPoint. But the net here is, you can actually see, in this particular case, all the subscriptions across all the different time dimensions. But the most important one is we collect a whole bunch of metrics: VM runtime, disk I/O, networks, what is the memory that was consumed, what is the CPU that was consumed. And now it allows you to do optimizations and analytics on it. If you want to come back and say, this is an example where we take the fabric data and the tenant data and start correlating. And you can see some of that power very quickly here in another report as well. So earlier, I showed you one of the most difficult things for providers is to stay compliant within the infrastructure, SPLA agreements, because It's a function of processors, and it's a function of number of guests that you're running. So this time around, we create an out-of-the-box report that tells you in your data center, across, this is agnostic of subscriptions, because this is, you're now thinking like a provider. What is the, how many processors that I'm running, how many VM that I'm running in a given month, so that I can remit to Microsoft within the SPLA license agreement. So, and then you can start seeing the trends as well. So in this particular case, I don't have to refresh, it's a monthly report. It refreshed only, it shouldn't change anything. But you can actually see here that in the month of May, I consume so much, in the month of June, I consume so much, or just in a quarter, I can. So this is largely intended to very quickly give you an idea as to how to optimize and operate your environment. This is not about, this is largely if you're a storefront guy, if you're managing your store, you care about the money in and money out. It's the metrics that help you do that. We don't actually deal with the money, but the operational metrics that directly relate to your business. And we are trying to make it a little bit easier by providing the warehouse capability and the analytical capabilities out of the box. So that concludes my three or four demos that I wanted to show. So the key takeaways, as I mentioned, there are three things that I want to talk about. One is, what is CSPP? How can we actually stay, what can we do for chargeback from the enterprise standpoint? And the third point was about the tenant usage. The tenant subscription is largely a new concept and a new investment that we are making. I strongly recommend you to go listen to some of these tracks in the modern data center. And this is, again, as you heard Brad talk earlier, we want to take and start providing insights. And the way I feel about this is every day, me and my team, the only thing that we constantly ask ourselves is, how do we provide more value than we capture? Because we today are capturing a lot of value, and this is an investment to go back and then turn this into a little bit of value so that our hosters and others don't have to have a lot of investment to start getting that insight that they care about. They can start with something that we put out of the box, and as we'll continue to invest more, my intention is to go back and provide richer and richer analytics out of the box so that they can continue to stay competitive in their businesses. So this is important. I've mentioned this a couple of times. I strongly recommend you to attend these sessions or watch these videos. The ones that I've cherry-picked here are the ones that'll help you understand what Brad was talking about earlier in the keynote in terms of cloud consistency, in terms of some of the investments that we are making more in the portal, where we have investments in the data center as a whole, and how some of these things fit in. Okay, so that roughly wraps up my session. So thank you very much, and there are more sessions here. And that's it. Oh, this is, for some reason, they have not updated this, I apologize. I think there is, I saw one on the outside. Thank you very much.